Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, senior correspondent with Rare Disease Advisor. We're speaking today with Dr. Brenda Wong, director of the MDA Care Center at UMass Chan Medical School in Worcester, Massachusetts. Dr. Wong has been working with Duchenne muscular dystrophy patients since 1999 and is considered one of the nation's top experts in Duchenne. Thank you for being here with us, Dr. Wong.
Thank you for having me.
Please tell us about the Tribute Award, which you are receiving from the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
It has been a great honor to receive this Tribute Award. I am a clinician, and basically I focus on the clinical care of patients with Duchenne and Becker's muscular dystrophy. And I used to take care of patients with other neuromuscular diseases as well. But in light of the many advances and research trials and work that is involving one single specialty, there ain't enough time for managing all. So I have been focused on the care of patients with Duchenne and Becker's muscular dystrophy here at UMass Chan Medical School's MDA Care Center's DMD program since 2018. It has been our focus to bring to the families a coordinated, comprehensive care program that is care-centric as well as collaborative, that will enable us to help the families navigate all their care needs, including trial needs and research needs, with them not being burdened with needing to connect the dots and navigate the complexities of each individual visits and care. So it has been an honor to be given this tribute in recognition for the clinical work that we have done.
Wonderful. As I recall, before coming to Massachusetts, you were in Cincinnati, where you did similar work.
Correct. I started in 99 with the MDA clinic at Cincinnati Children's, which took care of about 1,000 patients, including 50% of whom are Duchenne patients and some Beckers, and of course SMAs and other myopathies, the other disorders that come under the umbrella of the MDA. It was there in the early 2000s that we saw the need for setting up such a interdisciplinary clinic that would be us playing the role of their quarterback in order to help them connect the dots and provide holistic care and treat the patient with Duchenne's and Becker's and neuromuscular disorders rather than treat the diseases itself. That brought about a huge demand from families in the mid-2000s that we started in 2005, the first out-of-state patients. And that really grew rapidly in 3 years to a huge number of out-of-state patients. And that was when we realized that families were thirsting for such a care model. So we have refined that. And in fact, over those years there, we have set about setting up a specialty medical home in terms of a specialty care practice, improve on the processes of such a program. It is complex and involving many providers, including scheduling patients' multiple visits at one setting, but it does provide them with the satisfaction in patient and family experience.
Can you give us some idea of how many patients you are caring for at the moment, and how big is your staff? How many people does it take to run an MDA care center?
Right now, we started here with a small program. It was much bigger at Cincinnati Children's that had grown over like 18, 19 years. We started here coming to 5 years in May of 2023. And we started with a skeletal crew. There were four of us from Cincinnati who came and started that with two supporting admins. We have one PT, one OT, and we have three CRCs, clinical research coordinators at this point. Indeed, it is a skeletal crew, but it's a fantastic team who would jump in to do the tasks that is not our responsibilities, but just to enable the clinic and the trials to go on. And so one see the challenges of setting up such a care model, which I would say it has long been the goal to have an integrative practice unit, which will have your own team and support it and have a budget and a business plan based on that model.
How many patients are you caring for at this time?
We have grown to probably over 400. And that itself is pretty much putting a cap on the number of clinic appointments that we can have.
And they come from Massachusetts, across New England. Where are they coming from?
So we are here to primarily serve the families in the Northeast with such a clinic. But we that's probably about a third of our families. The rest come from other states and other countries.
I see. Could you give us some idea of the clinical trials that you're running? You mentioned that you have three CRCs. What kind of trials are you currently involved in?
So basically, we have pharma trials since, as you're aware, there has been an increasing number of opportunities for clinical trials for DMD patients. We have been providing the fibrogen trial. We had been involved in Astellas trial. When we arrived, we were also participating in Capricorn. And at that time, 2018, we were a site for the solid gene therapy trial. We're working on the Pfizer at that time as well, though with clinical holds and changes that has not started. Sarepta trials. We have exon-skipping trials, Sarepta and Dyne, and there are many, a couple more upcoming ones. And we are also involved in the Edgewise trial for Becker's. We also engage in our own clinical outcomes with our real-world data. So that means we have our own clinic registry. For which we collect our clinical data from each visit. And that itself, it's per a quite a standard care protocol. And though it is clinical data, but we were able, over the past in Cincinnati and like over here, able to have clinical data to evaluate the trends of outcomes and treatments depending on interventions, and helping us learn the areas for improvement for care. So that is kind of real-world data, shall I say. And that we have contributed in the past in Cincinnati, our data to collaborative efforts with CTAP and DRSC, sharing our clinical data to provide the natural history. So it had been great to be able to be part of that natural history data with our collaborators that is in the U.S. and Europe.
Over the years, since you've seen so many patients with Duchenne, can you comment on the progress that has been made in exon skipping and, of course, in actual daily living treatment with steroids and also the potential for gene therapy to treat Duchenne someday?
When we first started in 2000, it was just the era of the ability to diagnose with a genetic test. And in 2006, that was the first regulatory trial. That was Atuluran trial. That was the first pharma trial for Duchenne as a whole. And then closer to 2008 or so, we started seeing more trials. By now, there are so many trials that we are encountering a problem of competing trials, just competing for patients right now. It is where patients have the choice of various trials rather than a single trial for which they were eligible for. We have seen the evolving of the first generation of exon skipping 51 drugs, followed by 45 skipping and 53, to the current second generation PPMO for our Sarepta PPMO 5051 trial for skipping 51. We have seen the start of the other exon 51 skipping trial by Dyne, and there are upcoming ones by PepGen and BioMarin as well. And that is just exon 51. And so you can see now we may not have enough patients when there are various competing trials.
And there's also exclusions for, obviously, if the cutoff of a certain age, if a boy reaches his eighth birthday, he may not qualify for a trial that specifies ages 4 to 7, and I know they're very strict about that. So you're saying at this point, families do have choices in which trials they wish to enroll their sons?
Correct, because I think in our clinic, after each clinic visit, we're able to assess, you know, whether they meet age criteria, they meet kind of roughly the model criteria and mutation criteria. So even though there's 4 to 7, some of them may not meet each trial in terms of failing the mutation criteria or failing the model criteria. And the older trials for older boys, they may miss the mark for the pulmonary criteria or cardiac criteria. So I think that's our role in clinic after each visit, to provide that information for families to make their decision. The exon 51 skipping boys may have more choices. Those that's not exon 51 skippable right now may be limited to fewer trials. You're right, the 4 to 7, it cuts at 7 years, 11 months. And so oftentimes when trials are delayed in starting, they aged out. And so that is that disappointment. But we look for other trials starting 8 to 18, or, you know, trials that go from 4 to 9. So there are various trials with various gene age cutoffs, though you're right that the gene therapy trials tend to cut off, like for the younger ones, at 4 to 7.
Just to wrap up, because we're almost out of time, have you seen the life expectancy of Duchenne patients increase significantly over the time that you've been treating them?
Oh, sure. It's amazing. For those families who are very adherent to care plans, and with this era of steroids, the previous data that says survival to the 20s, we are seeing ourselves pushing that limit. Now, I would say at least the 30s. I mean, I have several 30-year-olds, and only once on trig and bant, and it's like, what, 37, 30, 38 now. My other patient from Cincinnati, but the rest are not on trig and bant in the early 30s. And so that data has to be rewritten for the internet, because the boys get really discouraged when they hit 20s and they think that, you know, they've got a few years left.
Just to wrap up on speaking about gene therapy, how long do you think it will be before we have a gene therapy for Duchenne?
I understand Sarepta has announced that they would be submitting their IP for regulatory approval. So we hope to hear in 2023 with the outcome of that submission. And there are various other companies also dealing with the other forms of gene therapy vectors. So it is high risk, but I think the work seems to be moving forwards.
Wonderful. Dr. Wong, thank you so much for talking with us. Congratulations on the award, and we'll be in touch. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.